Welcome to the Avance Podcast. I'm Dan.
Did you give that enough time?
I think I did.
Okay.
Because I'm not using Riverside.
Nick. I'm Nick. Okay.
Nick's here too. We have a guest this week.
We're in the same room. I know.
That's true.
You're back.
It's good to be back.
Is it?
No, not really.
You literally 3 seconds ago was like, I don't want
to
be
It's good to be back in the studio. Sure. Let's put it that way.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back home, you know. But yeah. But you're home. You did. How long was your journey from that last day on Sunday? 16, 17 hours?
Yeah. It was supposed to be... like 14 hours.
That's what I figured.
It turned into about 18 hours.
Ooh.
Yeah, so when I left Moab, we left at 4 in the morning, and we were like, all right, this will be great. We'll get home at like 7:30 in the evening, no problem. We got the truck. I can actually do the speed limit with the new truck, you know, pulling a trailer. So we get on the road. We're making good time. Pass is shut down. Head-on fatality over the pass out of going into Salt Lake City from Moab. And so we had to detour up backwards after waiting there for like 2.5 hours. We had to go backwards up through Park City. Now, normally, if I had just gone straight to Park City, we're talking like a 30-minute difference. Of course, 3 hour delay is what it ended up being. That was unfortunate. Just a sad occurrence there.
It's hard to plan for those type of horrible fatalities.
Yeah, turning around the trailer on a 2-lane highway was interesting, too.
Oh, and a longer truck now.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I literally walked up the highway and found a spot that was flat enough, and I just took it off-road, took the trailer through, and made it backwards.
Was it just you and Sean at the time, or had you dropped everybody off yet?
No, I had two people with me, and two of them had to go to the airport, and they missed their flight. I had three people with me, so that was,
Yeah, lots of fun.
It was an adventure. Luckily, it worked out fine. I mean, we made it home just fine. The truck was great. The trailer was great. You know, no issues on the way home except using a bunch of diesel.
I pulled into your driveway, and I was very excited to see your truck, and then our guest has brought his Dodge, and when I say that, like... If you're a child of the 80s and 70s and 80s, you will know this. In fact, we will take a picture and we'll post it into the podcast.
Yeah, it's a great truck. This is the first thing I said. I was like, nice truck.
Yeah.
That thing's badass.
I pulled in the drive. I'm like, oh, Dan's got, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's so pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's been, it's been nasty here ever since then. You got home and then the sun came out. So thanks for that. We appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, it rained when I got here and then today it was all nice and sunny. So it was great. Yeah. I haven't had time to do anything in that sun, but, you know, desperately need to mow my lawn, but you know.
Yeah. God.
I know.
Didn't you have the lawn crew mow when you
were
gone?
I should have.
Somebody's going to get beat.
It's me. I'm the lawn crew.
I know. I was going to say, you need to beat yourself with a wet noodle.
Yeah.
Yes. Fair enough.
I'll whip myself over the back.
Yes.
Nice. Let's do a Carter Automotive Group tip of the week coming to you from the desert. So we've been planning our monkey trip, which we will be in Moab again with the Honda Monkeys and the big bikes and the trailer and friends.
So, you know, we've talked about a group chat that's going on. I almost don't want to talk about it. Like every time we talk about it, I then get on the counter. I'm like, oh, it's still 5 months away. It's still, you know,
it's
so
5 months away.
Yeah.
But this tip goes beyond Honda Monkeys and open air intakes on little motorcycles that are close to the ground. If you're going to the desert, one of the things that you should be considerate of is sand and dust, which seems obvious when you talk about the desert, but you do have to make a change to your vehicle if you are...
Can't we just stay on the rocks?
We could, yeah. Okay. Just hop from rock to rock like trials riders.
Yeah.
That would make it a lot easier.
I mean, you laugh about the dust now, and I mean, I've ridden behind you long enough that's what, when you're like, oh, the dust is, I'm like, that's not going to bother me. Yeah.
The thing is if you are running a wet filter, and by wet, I mean K&N, or you're running an oil filter for your motorcycle, which a lot of motorcycles run wet oil gauze filters. That's just how they come. That can be really problematic in the desert, especially in the desert where you get fine silt and sand that loves to travel right through those, and it loves to clog K&N air filters. K&N air filters, you can get it's an outer wear, so a pre-filter for them, but it's still going to get clogged. So if you have the option to switch to a dry filter, you should. One, they do filter better. K&Ns work by simply allowing more air to pass through because they don't catch as much stuff.
Which seems to defeat the purpose of having an air filter.
Right. Yeah. It's that. We've talked about this on many episodes. Like I think it was probably a couple hundred episodes ago. We talked about how if you look at the testing online and the actual like fine particulate matter testing that they can do, they don't filter as well. It's a trade-off for performance versus, changing your oil more often is a good thing to do if you switch to a high flow air filter.
Yeah.
You're going to get dirtier oil, you're going to get more particulates in your engine. But that's especially problematic when you're talking about sand, because sand is rock and glass and diamond and all sorts of things that like to scratch cylinders up really bad.
So I'm hearing there's diamond inside my monkey now?
Technically, yes.
Okay, yeah. Great. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, great.
So technically, it's a bunch of basalt. And especially in a place like Moab, where all that sand is sandstone, so it's really soft, fine super fine powder silt when you get into there. So if you can, you want to switch to a more restrictive system. It's a trade-off you're going to make. If you're a, you know, if you're a professional racer and you can afford a new engine after you're done, a little different story. We're not. As much as, I mean, it would give us that excuse to do that big bore.
I mean, Milwaukee just released a 500 cm air I don't know, blower. So I'm just going to put that on the front of the bike and I'll just blow the silt out of the way.
Right.
I'm winning. Yeah.
That's genius.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I turn it around and it's propulsion.
Exactly.
On a monkey, it would probably actually work and make a difference.
I mean, the way the batteries I'd have to carry would be an issue, but other than that, we're going to try that.
We are going to try that.
We're going to try that.
Yeah, okay. Totally going to try that.
Exactly.
Just put a kite out there in front and take you like a sail.
You've got the gas powered backpack. I'm going to put it on and see if it works.
It's true. I got the big one.
I'll just hold it backwards. Yeah.
That's not hillbilly at all.
No, absolutely. At least not hillbilly. Yeah.
But yeah, the point being, if you're going to go out in the desert, it's a good idea to switch to a dry filter. They do filter better, and they won't hold that sand stuck to them. That'll fall off. And so, and if you're running an open top airbox or you're running an open air intake system like we are on the monkeys, you might want to add some kind of guard to just kind of deflect the dust away. It's not going to solve it entirely, but think about that next time you go party in the sand. Some vehicles, this is where a snorkel really comes in handy. Everybody talks about water in a snorkel, but they're actually designed for dust. So, just
picturing a snorkel on a monkey,
giant PVC pipe up in the air
with a flag.
Yeah. So yeah, snorkels on vehicles are actually designed for dust. That was their main purpose. That's why they run them down more in the desert in Australia than anywhere else. You don't think about a lot of water crossings in Australia. It's not. It's all the dust. So,
actually, I have a question for you that just came up in my mind from that snorkel thing. Are we going to have to put flags on the bikes?
No.
No?
No, we're not going into the RV areas. We're not going into the sand dunes. We're going everywhere. Everywhere we're going, we actually need a plate for, so we're fine. You don't even need an off-road tag.
We need a plate?
Yes.
I should probably register it.
You should out there. The White Rim Trail, you need to get a permit for, but it's like $3.
Yeah.
You just register online and say, hey, I'm going to be out there, and that's literally to let them know, hey, if this guy dies, this is where he is.
Come find him, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's what it's for. So.
Well, now that I moved out here, my tabs will be cheaper, but I've got to figure out when... Like, you know, Washington State DMV, like if your tabs are due in May and you go back in December and get tabs, then you still have to go back the next May and get tabs. Like it doesn't change. So
yeah, I think mine are December. So
yeah, I've got both the bikes are allegedly without tabs. So,
oh, they don't check here. So
they will now.
Yeah. Now that we said it.
Yeah. They will now. We jinxed it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, should we introduce our guest this week?
Yeah, he's been laughing in the background the whole fucking time.
I just wanted to say that was probably the last time K&N is ever going to sponsor anything. Yeah. It's done now.
We've gotten a lot of people have come to us and been like, you've been honest about it. Like everybody, K&N, everybody loves K&N because it's shoved in their face.
Everybody's amazed. They're not. You've been honest. Yeah. It's a miracle.
Yeah. I will say this. I've run K&N in a lot of my cars and they've been great. Yeah. But at the end of the day, when you're doing this extracurricular activity,
it's not the right tool for the job. Yeah. So it's a great tool for a performance engine, something that you're not going to get into seriously dirty.
And when you see a giant mudding truck with the word K&N on the side of it sponsored, that's a special K&N filter that's in that truck.
Like, yeah.
That, you're not getting that at AutoZone.
So the racing filter, I actually know a lot about this because I've designed a lot of these systems for race bikes back in the day. And so you get the standard K&N oil gauze filter, then you get a foam outer filter, and then you add the additional outer wears cover. It's like a you've seen what I'm talking about.
Like the things that we put over the monkey.
Yeah, so you end up with a three-stage filter system. Yeah. They end up filtering about as well as a stock filter. Yeah. But K&N really shines at is giving you that custom application because you can get a filter to any length, size, flange size. They'll make it any way you want. So it's not, I mean, yeah. It probably sounded like I was bashing K&N here, but it's like, no, they're designed for certain applications and this is not really where one of them unless you go to a really custom air intake system. And then they do have a system for that. But most people aren't going to go to that for a Honda Monkey.
It's so
they're going to go to that for a sand rail.
They don't have a custom filter for a small 125 bike that shouldn't be in the desert in the first place.
Exactly.
A bunch of like five fat idiots riding through the dirt rocks.
Yeah, exactly.
So weird they don't have that.
Trendsetters.
Trendsetters. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're like sparking a whole nother.
Oh, absolutely. We've been doing that ever since we got the Monkeys. Yeah. But
if you've got a sand rail with a custom, you know, V8 swap or something, then you're going to be able to get
also,
the custom filter.
Those filters, if you notice, were pointing backwards and they're hidden as far away from the wheels as they can get them.
And they're tucked behind a snorkel system.
Yep.
So they don't get all the dust and particulate.
Yep.
So
it makes sense.
Yeah.
It's just the right tool for the job.
I agree. Well, if you have read the latest edition of the Avance magazine, you've probably already read the article about this week's guest. We've been trying to get him on. Well, it's been one of those things like we all wanted to get together, and then we were like, the three of us need to be in the same room. Like, I just, after reading the article and looking at stuff that he's done, I knew that this would be an article. We need to be in the same room. So,
and you brought props.
I did. Well, we're going to be.
We're getting deep.
Yeah.
We're diving deep.
Not only did I bring props, I'm hoping I can talk him into homework. Paid homework, but still homework.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But Seattle Speedometer, Buzz Rass. Is it Rass or Rass?
It's Rass. It's like ass with an R.
All right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I said it R-ass. Right. I'm pretty proud of myself.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First of all, tell me about the truck in the parking lot.
Okay. So I'm a big Dodge guy. I love Dodge trucks. Uh-huh. And I love all Dodge trucks. I mean, I've always been a Mopar guy, but I love the trucks. I bought like a first gen Cummins, and I've had that forever and ever. And that's such a good truck that I just kind of like sparked this whole
never die truck.
Yeah. I was like, well, I got to get more trucks. I got to get more of these. Like, this is a great one. At one point I had, let's see, mine was a 92 Cummins. My wife had a 93 Cummins extended cab manual, and my son has a 91. It's an X Forest Service truck. Oh man, it's an awesome. It's got that cool green color.
I was
going
to say, is it the green?
Oh yeah. And I like got new like Forest Service decals for the doors, and oh, it's just the most bitching thing ever. So I got deep into the first gen Dodge stuff.
Are you looking to adopt?
So then it's like, well, you know, you get into trucks and you're like, well, what's like the holy grail? You're like, well, an old crew cab. That's like,
yeah,
that's what you want.
Yeah.
You know, because I can put the family in there. It's still this tough old truck. And so then I started kind of dating that. And what I found was like, there's a bunch of crew cabs. They're out there, they're for sale, but 90% of the time they're like two wheel drive automatic crew cabs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I live in the middle of nowhere. So I have to have a truck that not only like is cool, but like it really has to handle a beating.
It's a truck.
A truck is different in, you know, Bellevue than it is out in Ellensburg.
And just so we're clear, he's sitting here in cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. Like, he's full.
Like I'm pulling
truck user.
Oh yeah, like I'm pulling trailers with cattle in them sometimes.
Absolutely.
I mean, you just never know what's going to happen. So
not that mini cattle crap, right? Who'd try to buy those things?
Mr. Abrams. So my son is like a proficient Facebook marketplace browser. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's only 15, but like he's the son of a bitch that always gets to everything before like 90% of everybody else. No, you're always on there and you're like, oh, look at this one. Oh, it's gone. You know,
I've already asked.
Because somebody's already, already, you know.
Yeah.
He's always the first one there. So this truck comes up. It's a 1980 Dodge. It's a four-wheel drive crew cab with a manual transmission, which that particular setup,
unicorn,
super rare.
Yeah.
The coolest part is there is a tag on the dash that says custom built for the Grant County PUD.
Nice.
And so this was the Grant County PUD's like remote truck where they would send it out to fix stuff.
And it's seen some shit.
Okay. I mean, it's nuts. It has like a there's a handle on the dash that activates a, let's see, it's a transmission. It's a manually driven PTO. It comes off the transmission to the front, which drove an enormous winch. And somebody at some point stole the winch.
Yeah.
But everything else is still there. And I found another winch. I just have to put it back on. But I mean, the things, you know, the bumper like sticks out like a foot and a half and it's nuts. But anyway, so my son finds this truck and it says it's in, I don't know, Wapato or somewhere way far away. So I message the guy. I'm like, you know, what's the deal? And, oh yeah, you know, I got this truck. I'm a tow truck driver. I pulled it out of a field like a couple of years ago. I've been sitting in the field for like 20 years. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, can I drive to Wapato and take a look at it? No, man. I'll just bring it to Ellensburg. He's like, I got a lot in Wapato, and he's like, I got a lot in Ellensburg. I'll just throw it on my truck He's like, I'll just drop it off in the lot in Ellensburg. He's like, you just come down and take a look at it.
Score.
I was like, yes. Because, you know, usually it's this big,
I definitely enormous... don't want this truck. You should drive back to Wapentake. It'll definitely still be here.
Yeah. But, you know, every time you, like, try to buy a car, it's in a... whole thing. Yeah. It's never easy.
Mm-hmm. No.
And so the guy messages me, like, 48 hours later. He's like, hey, just brought the truck back. You can come by and see it. And this is, I think he probably messaged me. It was in the evening, like maybe 7 o'clock. So I immediately back, I was like, well, can I just see it tonight? He's like, well, yeah, sure.
How about now? Now? Yeah. How about now?
I was like, how about now? Can I come see it now? Yeah, now. Not that you want to show your hand how excited you are, but I was just like, well, I'll come look at it right now.
Yeah.
And of course, I just immediately hook up the car trailer because it's like,
this
fucker's coming home. Home
It's a sign.
So I get there, and it is without a doubt the most rust-free truck I have ever seen. Like,
it's been sitting in the driest field in Washington for 20 years.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the driver's window had been busted out, and it's full of dust and dirt, and you know, mouse shit, and everything else that gets thrown at them when they sit in a field for 20 years. So I talk to him, and we do the deal. I get it on the trailer. I take it home over the next couple of days, you know, pressure wash it, this, that, and the other. And so I'm telling my son, I was like, well, we should get this thing started. I won't let, you know, what can of worms have I bought here? And we put a battery in it, and we have to monkey with the carburetor for a while. We finally get it started. And this truck, I don't know what the Grant County PUD was doing, but at some point they rebuilt the motor in this truck.
Oh.
And I feel that some Grant County PUD money exchanged hands to the engine builder, because that thing runs hard. I mean, hard. It's the hardest running car I've ever... I mean, it's ridiculous. That thing will smoke the tires for like a block and a half. And I
allegedly.
I mean, well, yes. Under certain extreme circumstances.
Somebody's going back to the Grant County book.
When it's snowing, accidentally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it is... That truck, without a doubt, is one of the coolest old... I mean, it just has the heart of a lion. It's insane. And, you know, four-wheel drive. And it's, and you feel like such a man when you're driving it. Holy shit, you know. You got this big-ass truck, and it's got all this horsepower. Sure. And it's a stick. And, you know, you put the cowboy hat on, and that's the whole package.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's, you're living that's the American dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Pass everything. But
I looked out the window, and I was like, damn, that is cool.
Well, also, I just figured, like, every time somebody comes here to get talk on this podcast, they probably got some fancy fucking car. I mean, who knows what they're showing up in. And you know it's detailed to the nines.
That's a good point.
And it's like, I am going to bring the most,
you win.
Kind of fucked up truck.
No, it's not fucked up. Like,
but,
it's like
this is, it is not, that truck gets used every day.
Also, it's yellow, right?
Yeah. It's like a safety yellow.
It does not blend in.
No. Like,
it's
just badass. And then you have this, like, psycho, like, 7-foot blonde guy driving it.
Absolutely.
Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, exactly. The world doesn't make sense.
Actually, my neighbors are like, that thing's perfect.
Yeah, blends in this neighborhood.
Yeah, where we're at, the thing's just right at home.
Fit right in.
All right, so I had to get that out of the way because I was really interested in the truck when I saw you pull up. But, I mean, we said earlier, you're with Seattle Speedometer. You own Seattle Speedometer.
Yes.
And you have done work for many of our many of the Avance members, I'm sure. And I've been admiring your work since before the magazine, really, because people have talked about it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean...
Good stuff, I hope.
It's a small market. Like, there's not a lot of people out there rebuilding speedometers.
Yeah, and what do people say? Like, if Spicoli was a cowboy? Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
I used to get Kid Rock, I think, when he was
I could definitely see that.
When that
I
was popular.
I didn't see that.
I don't know if that's even popular. Yeah,
I saw something the other day. I got to say this because you said Kid Rock. So Kid Rock makes music for people who can only see their kids on weekends but still don't.
Okay. 7 foot Kid Rock. I think we're gonna go with that. I like that better.
So, 2 years behind on your child support payments.
Yeah.
Anyway,
they drive yellow trucks.
Yeah.
So part mechanic, part artist. You do some badass work, to say the least.
Thank you.
Everything from motorcycles to cars. I mean, I was browsing the portfolio online and just drooling. You mentioned Ben Abrams. You did a lot of his stuff. E-Garage did some movies for you.
Oh yeah.
And now you're in the Avance magazine, of course.
I'm feeling good about that.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. It's very cool. It's a great article.
Where did this come from? Where did this start?
The gauges?
No, I mean, like
how did I get here?
Yeah. Because you have to understand.
I drove this giant yellow truck here.
I get that. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm talking into a microphone.
This is like in Goonies when they looked at him and was like, all right, what did you do? Okay, when I was six, I stole a candy bar.
Exactly. How far back you want to go?
How far back you want to go? I mean, obviously, you've loved cars for a long time.
Yes.
You know, and one of the reasons I was laughing with before is like, I've been looking for a gauge guy for a long time. Like, I literally ripped a gauge out of the dash of my Triumph just to bring it here today. To talk to you and figure out what can be done. And yep. Two, what does it take? These are not easy things to do. Like, it's not.
No. And when it's precise, they go, works like clockwork.
It's yeah. not, I mean, yeah, there's definitely some sheared gears or something in there. It's making noises like I wouldn't even want to. But I want to talk about that. Like, so obviously you have a love of cars. How'd you get into fixing gauges and making custom gauges?
Well, I mean, how long do we got here?
As long as you want.
Talk. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll start at the beginning.
Hurry up.
And you can just give me the whole sign where you're like, wrap it up, fucker. Well, I tell you what, it started, I was a bouncer at a bar in Belltown.
Okay.
And this was an awesome job. And it was.
Was it Cowgirls with Nick?
I was a bouncer at Cowgirls.
Were you? Yes. No shit.
Yeah, that was.
No, I was up at the Viceroy mm-hmm. on the corner of 2nd and Battery.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you don't have any holes in you. That's pretty good.
No. But man, I've got some great stories.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So I was working that job, which was a lot of fun. And it was great because I'm so big that nobody ever really wants to take a swing at you or like really fuck with you.
Yeah.
So that was fun. It never got super dangerous, but there came a point where I was like, I got to do something else. This is getting nuts. And so just talking to a couple of my friends, like, I need a new job. What am I going to do? Just one of my friends, like, hey, I know this guy, he owns a restoration shop and he's looking to hire somebody. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that sounds promising. Give me his phone number. So I call him. He's like, yeah, come by the shop. We'll chat it up.
You have great luck calling people. Like, hey, I need a truck. Okay, I'll bring it to you. Hey, I need a job. Okay, come on, bye.
You know, that's like, if I could give anyone a word of advice, always just ask for what you want.
Sure.
Don't ever, like, fuck around and try to just make it. Just put your 100% out there, and 90% of the time, you will actually get what you want. It's surprising. But anyway, that's my little life tip.
Yeah. Write that down.
Yeah. So I call the dude. I get to the shop. They restore vintage Chrysler's. Cool. So, you know, you think.
Like Imperials and stuff like that?
Yeah. Okay. And the specialty was 1955 through 1964 Chrysler 300s.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
then basically all the lightweight, like factory drag cars and stuff, all the crazy stuff you could buy from Chrysler. So he had started this shop in the late 70s, and there an old guy had taught him how to fix gauges. So he was fixing gauges, selling parts, and restoring whole cars. And there was only one other guy that worked in the shop. So the guy that owned the shop was just like frazzled because he's like, I can't do all three.
Yeah.
He's like, I need somebody that I can train to fix the gauges. They can do that. And he's like, then I can focus on the whole cars and the parts. I just happened to be the guy that showed up that said, like, yeah, that sounds like
7 foot guy with big hands. Yeah. That should be easy to work on small gauges.
Yeah. The biggest guy working on the smallest parts. So I ended up actually working there for 10 years and I turned it into its own division and I hired people and it was its own thing.
Huh.
And I learned a lot. And, the great thing about that is, you know, when you make large mistakes, you're making it on somebody else's dime. And so when, you know, you fuck a lot of stuff up, you're like, well,
that's a bumper sticker right there. When you make large mistakes, make it on somebody else's dime.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, you know, the company can absorb it. So then I learned all this stuff, what to do, what not to do, how to do things, yada, yada. And then after about 10 years, I got married and I bought a house and I had a kid, and I remember I went to him and I was like, hey, I'm going to need more money. I'm going to need to get paid more.
Yes.
Cause I saw what the books were doing. And it's like, we're doing really good.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a very small
thanks to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
So,
and this is an art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's at the time couldn't have pissed me off more, but it's the greatest thing that ever happened. And he said, well, maybe you should find another job.
Oh.
I was like, oh, okay. Right about the same time.
My wife and child are going to love that answer.
Yeah. I don't even think I told him that's what exactly. He said. But, about the same time, I bought this 69 Porsche 912, which now that I'm telling the story out loud, doesn't sound like I needed more money. But at the time, those cars, nobody gave a shit.
No, you bought a Porsche, so you definitely needed more money.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. But nobody gave a shit about the 912 until about 5 years ago.
Yeah, they were like...
They're garbage. Everybody, that's not a real Porsche. That's a Volkswagen engine.
Three, four grand any day of the week. Yeah.
So this guy like who lived kitty corner from me, I had been in that house for 10 years. That car had been in his garage the entire time, never saw it. And so I had
friends don't hide cars from friends. I'm just going to say that right now.
All right.
Yeah. So he's got this car. One day I'm like coming back from somewhere and the garage door is open and I can see the back end of it. And I was like, oh my God, there's a 912 in there. You know, and there's like cardboard boxes sitting on. You know how it looks.
Storage rack. Yeah.
So as I just keep going and drive my house, it's like, I'm sure everybody's already tried to buy it. Just forget it. You know, but this also harks back to just go ask for what you want. So I'm walking up to my front door. I'll never forget. And I kind of just turn around one last time to look at the house. And he had put his house up for sale that day. Brand new sign right in the front for sale. I was like, well, maybe he would want to sell.
Maybe he doesn't want to move with that car.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. So then it's like, well.
Now you're helping him.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, let me. Exactly. I need to help this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. You're doing the right thing. Yeah.
So I turn around. I walk back there. He's in the yard raking leaves. And he had bumped the garage door open. He had it on his belt or something. Bumped it. And that's why it was open. And I just, of course, because I'm almost 7 feet tall, I just look over the fence and say, hey, you ever think about selling that Porsche? And I shit you not. He's like, you know, I was thinking just today that I need to sell it. I was like, what? Let's sit down and have a conversation. So I buy this car. I bring it back, and the gauges are all messed up. They're cloudy. They're dirty. Some of the paint's falling off the pointers. They look like shit.
I have no idea how that happens.
Right. Yeah.
So I get this car, and I'm driving it around every day because it's not worth jack squat at that point.
Is this the before after yours?
No, that's a different one.
Okay.
But that is a 912.
I am looking at the Seattle Speedometer website, by the way, where he has some good examples.
Before and after.
There's a 912 gauge right here, yeah.
So I take them out, and I was like, well, they can't be any different than the Chrysler stuff I'm working on. And I take them all apart, and it's like, well, this is...
Oh, you were just working on Chrysler gaps.
I was only working on Chrysler stuff at the time. I thought he was doing... No,
that makes sense. You just said Chrysler. Okay.
Are you paying attention?
I was trying to.
Have you been drinking?
It's the end of the day, okay. And I have ADHD, so yeah.
So that's wearing off. I take the gauges apart, and like, Jesus, they're pretty close to everything else I'm used to. And I cleaned them all up and I put them back in. And a buddy of mine was working at Chris's German Auto as a mechanic. And I showed him and he was like, you can fix these gauges? Yeah, I think I can. He's like, oh, okay. So he tells his boss. And so then they start siphoning gauges to me to fix. And so then I'm fixing them for those guys. And then Akers gets wind of it. And John Walker and everybody, all the other Porsche. And man, within a very short amount of time, it went from, you know, working at a job that I didn't enjoy anymore to opening Seattle Speedometer. And it just took off like a rocket. I couldn't, even to this day, I still can't believe it.
Because originally it was in Seattle now. And now it's you're in Ellensburg, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was in West Seattle.
Okay.
And then, moved to Ellensburg about probably 8 years ago, about then. Yeah.
So, I mean, as a lover of old cars and things like that, and looking at what I've got here, how do you source parts and things like that? Because it's kind of, being from the British side of things, you know, everybody goes to Victoria British Limited, and they got bought out. But I'm saying it's really tough to find some of this, body panels and stuff. But like stuff like this is really tough, so you have to be really careful with it. You know, like screaming at it under the dash for an hour, hypothetically. Come out of the car!
Well, that's why they seal it up so you can't hurt it. You know,
tell you
so
well.
When I think of a speedometer, I just think of buying a speedometer. I don't think of buying parts. So
yeah, and you can't.
That, yeah, how does that
there
even
are,
work?
There are no parts to be bought.
Yeah, so you're just...
So, it all depends, I guess. And everyone is a specific case, because everybody's always like, well, what's the general? Well, I don't know, because half of what you cannot see can also be some of the most expensive parts. You know, somebody's like, I'll take a picture of it. It's like, well, that doesn't show me anything. I have to look inside.
That's what I'm worried about. So this is my tach.
Yeah.
And I've replaced this, the tachometer cable coming out of the engine.
Yeah.
And it is making a noise like it's like either gears have sheared off in there or something. I didn't realize kind of how somewhat simple it was when I took out the lights today. And there's not, there's a lot in there. I'm assuming there's, but I'm saying like what I expected to be in there, like I can see all the way to the face in here because of where the lights go.
Yeah.
But it's making a noise that sounds like I've killed a small weasel and shoved it into my dash and it's screaming at me.
Yes.
So I don't know, like, so let's take this as an example. Yep. What, I mean, obviously, you take something like this in and you start to take it apart. I mean, what's in these things? I don't want to give away the secret sauce, but.
No. Yeah. I mean, the long and short of it basically is there's a magnet in there, and then there's a steel cup that surrounds the magnet but never touches it.
Okay.
And each one, the magnetism off the magnet acts on the steel cup. That steel cup is attached to a shaft, and at the end of that shaft is your pointer.
Okay.
Now, that's how a mechanical speedometer works. Of course, an electronic is completely different. But that's kind of it. It's very simple. But there are a lot of things to go wrong, and they can be set up incorrectly. And there's also, you also have to think that, you know, what year is this Triumph?
59.
So in 1959, how long did you think Triumph figured that car would be on the road?
Not very long.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm surprised every time I look at the garage and it's still running.
Like, so maybe, but you got to think, they're like, well, this car will roughly probably last 5-6 years. Then they're going to get rid of it and they'll buy a brand new one. Mm-hmm. So none of these instruments were ever made to still be working in 2024.
Yeah.
So that is, which,
to my knowledge, this has never been out of the car. It's never been, it's never been serviced. It's never been looked at. Okay. The car has been taken care of, obviously. I mean, the amount of dirt and grime but it's never been out of the car. Like I spoke to my, you know, my dad, I've looked at our records. My grandfather had it since 1960.
Wow.
It's been in the family. So, nice. I mean, like, and it's been taken care of. This is the first time I've had a gauge that has done something. Like my oil pressure gauge works perfectly because it's got the oil line that goes up to it, pushes it, and things like, everything's worked great. This is the first thing. And it made such a noise that I was just like, and it's been like this for a year. I was looking steadily, and I think your name had come across my desk, and then it was one of those things like where nine other things came across my desk that day, and it was like, and it goes, because it's not my primary car, it goes to the wayside.
Yep.
And so, like I said, I thought this would be kind of an interesting thing to kind of go, okay, what's in here? You know, the mechanical part of me took it out of the car today, and I was like, well, I'll just open it up. I'm like, no, don't open up, because you will drop something, lose something.
Let me just open up the back of this watch.
That's the conversation I have myself. Like, dude, you're not a professional. Don't fucking do this.
And I'll tell you what, I have made more money off of people trying to fix their own
than
just fixing gauges that have never been touched.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, if you haven't done it for 10 years, you will break something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll just tell you that right now. Just don't do it. It's going to be cheaper to send it to me than for you to try to figure out, break a couple of things.
I'm going to hand deliver it to you here in about 30 minutes.
Pour it into a box and then mail it to me.
Yeah. 100%,
it's just going to go bad.
Yeah.
Quickly. Well, I know a little bit about this because only from the observation point of view is I love to watch restoration videos. Nick knows this about me. My mechanics and things like that on YouTube are like what I live for. I watch them religiously. And so it's not just fixing gauges here we're talking about. It's restoration. And this is a very delicate part of the restoration. And looking here at this example you have in your side of a 69 912 gauge before and after. And it's not, I mean, it's filling in the little dings and dents on the outside, the outer rings. It's the UV bleaching of the faces and the glass that's distorted. Plastic in a lot of cases has to be polished out.
Yep.
Which I'm assuming are you dipping and then doing it like a UV bath, or how does that work?
Well, as far as like faces, when
tell us everything. Yeah. And say it slowly.
It's like
real slow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even these, like, because you've got UV fading on the numbers even behind the glass sometimes, because they yellow over time.
Yep.
And so you've got to go in there and like repaint the back of or recondition the gauge black, recondition the needle, recondition the numbers, like that's
everything.
It's a huge.
I mean, there's
now he shares all this knowledge that he knows this.
No, I could never, ever do this. Saying, these hands are not meant for delicate work.
Yeah, mine either, trust me.
Big
hammer gauge come out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Give me a sledgehammer, I'll go to work, and that's where my skills end.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, I'll never hire you.
No.
No, I mean, when I look at these on here, it's like, every gauge you have to assess how it's going to go, because you can't, and because everyone's different. Every gauge has lived a different life. You know, there's a million, I've come up with a million different ways to do the same, to get the same results. But looking at it, you have to kind of read into it. You're like, okay, well, I think, you know, this, we're going to do this one, not this one. We're going to use this process, not this. So, like on these, for example, I kind of invented this. It's like a 3-part chemical wash that I wash the faces with, which will generally strip away a lot of the yellowing and leave the original graphics pretty bright white. And then I come back in and I top coat them with like a UV stable top coat. Now, sometimes I'll get a gauge and that is not a viable process because either it's been in the sun too long, the paint's too thin, there's too much corrosion on it. It's just not going to work. And making that judgment call can sometimes be the make or break on a gauge. Like you have to really understand how to read them in order for everything to work out so that you have a quality product in the end that you can get, that you can charge for. Because if I get a gauge and I tell the guy, oh, we're going to do this, this, and this, and it comes out and it's all fucked up, I can't charge him anything. In fact, now I probably owe him.
Face the purpose if the gauge doesn't work. Yeah.
Know, I mean, like that's the thing. It's like that, and just that skill, that takes years to be able to just look at it and be like, okay,
this will work. This
is going to work. This isn't, you know, we're just going to vapor blast this and we're going to start over, you know, or versus let's do the chemical wash. Let's replace this and let's not replace this. Let's machine polish it. Let's, you know, there's all these different processes that I have that I've kind of come up with over the last 24 years.
But you sit down with clients and go, okay, these are your options as far as if you want a gauge that works but isn't fully restored, or if you want something that's going to be concourse, you know, ready, things like that. I mean, are there different?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always tell people, it's like, we can take this as far as you want.
Okay.
But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that's what we have to do. A lot of times I'll get guys, they'll send me a set of Porsche gauges and they're like, look, this car's a survivor. I just want, if you can just kind of clean everything up, be very, like a sympathetic cosmetic restoration, and then mechanically completely.
I just want it to work. I want it to not make noise and sound like a weasel. Yeah.
But it's like also, it's like, you know, somebody, you know, if you've got a super low miles, you know, 65, 911, you want everything.
Perfect,
Well, but there's guys, you want it, if it's all original, you want it as original as possible, but also as clean as possible and nice. So, you know, or there's guys where it's like they just pulled a 65 911 out of a field and they're basically starting at zero.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's like, it just depends how far you want to go. And I try to, you know, at least call a client before I really get rolling and be like, okay, what's the vision here? Yeah. What do you got going with the car? Like, is this a daily driver? Is this just a show car? Do you care? Or is this just, are we just fixing it? You know, you just got to talk to them. But, I mean, there's a lot involved.
Yeah.
Well, we're not here to get with the secrets. It's just a matter of, like I said, that's what I'm saying. Like, especially with this, like, I need it to run. It's been good. It's not beat up totally, but it needs some love. And it obviously, internally, it definitely needs some love.
Right.
So, I mean, and that
I can actually, just by what you've told me, I can already tell you what's wrong with it.
Oh, okay, good.
The all of the grease, because it is a petroleum product.
Thank you.
Has evaporated out of it.
I knew it.
And
because I got the new speedometer cable and it had shit tons of grease on it. Okay. Yeah.
But see, you can't grease that.
No, I'm not going to.
They're not. I shouldn't say.
Well, you just squirt it in the hole in the back. No. It's fine.
It's easy. You can't imagine how many guys that tried that.
No, I'm sure
it does not work. But Yeah, it's not. That's the interesting thing is, with the exception of a couple, that mechanical speedometers and tachometers are not serviceable items.
Yeah.
You don't service them ever. Mm-hmm. They're just there and they work. And when they break, you throw them away and you get a new one. That was the dealership's plan.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, if it breaks, you throw it. So it's like that needs to be rebuilt. And the magnet shaft, which is what the cable is turning on that particular one, goes through a drilled piece of pot metal. There is no bushing in there. And so what you're hearing is as the grease evaporates, because it's petroleum.
I can't believe it only lasted 70 years. What a cheap grease.
I'm sitting here counting the years. I'm like, 70's not bad.
That's pretty
good. 70's not bad, yeah.
It's just dry, and it's rattling inside there. So while it's rattling, it's actually eating away the inside of it. So the whole the
good news is when it started, I instantly pulled that cable, thinking it was that, and it's been just dead in the dash.
You're
so
much smarter.
But okay, I did drive it for like probably a day and a half.
That's fine.
So hopefully,
I've had guys come and they're like, this speedometer's been making noise for 8 months, and now it doesn't work. So I unhooked the cable. I was like, "What the fuck would you do that for?"
Oh god!
Why didn't you unhook it? Because now it's going to be four times the money.
Yeah.
Because you've broken everything that is like valuable in there.
It's funny because and I have no idea why I had that intuition, but when you said that, like when I first did that, I was like, it sounds like the gears have gone dry or whatever's in there is rubbing, because it doesn't always make the noise.
It's chirping on the inside.
Yeah.
And when it makes that chirp noise, it's grabbing a little piece of pot metal.
Oh, great.
And that's what makes the squealing.
It really is in good condition, though.
The gauge itself.
I'm sure it's probably sat in a garage its whole life.
Absolutely. It's been in a garage. It's been, you know, like it's never been.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's ever been out of the car. Like, I know the dashboard has been out, but I don't think it's been out of the dashboard. So, and like I said, the biggest part, and then I did it slowly, was getting those brass nuts off there, because that was just absolutely.
I know you mangled the shit out of
me. I know.
Golly.
And that was me just like going,
fired.
Yeah, fired. It's fine. Exactly. That's why I have you open
That's
it up.
That's why I'm here.
You open it up. If it explodes.
This has never been off.
Yeah. Like, that's what I said.
Oh, man. Okay.
I'd like to say he's grasping the gauge right now, but 7 foot Kid Rock.
What the hell kind of podcast is this?
Yeah. I think you're the first guest to say that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, this is totally fixable.
That's another question.
Totally fine.
So when I pull this out, and obviously the little lights that come in here, the bulbs suck.
Yeah.
Is that something that can be, can gauges like this take new LED bulbs? Is that something that's wise, or is it more wise to just take the little bulbs that don't work and you can barely see the damn thing? So
the head mounted flashlight.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
Put the flashlight in.
Yeah, there's
head.
One of those in the car. You know. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, you can put LEDs in here. I mean, one thing.
We'll have one gauge you'll be able to see.
At least the tag.
Well, you should probably change them all. But,
yeah, I know. That's the goal. So
I will say, and this is just my artistic side saying this, that one thing I hate about LEDs is that when you turn them on, they look like LEDs.
Yes.
So here you've got a car built in, was it 59?
Yeah.
And it looks like it's got light bulbs from like a 2020 Honda Accord in it.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, well, that doesn't look right.
And as much as, I mean, we keep it, it's a driving car, and it's something that's been in the family. And obviously, since it's out, I looked at the bulbs are dying. I think that's part of it. Like, and I mean, they are the smallest little incandescent bulbs you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. They're super
I don't know how
tiny.
They've held on this much, but
size of a toothpick. Yeah. They're like that big. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to find, I mean, I've got a bunch at the shop that I've like, dug up from like some suppliers so that they're like you get that warm light, and for
that's
me
what
that,
I want
that
I want to
visually
feel warm.
Yeah. Visually it's got, you know, it can't look weird when you put it back in. But I mean, you can also like in Porsche, you know, not to keep hammering on Porsche, but you know, their instrument lighting system is very poor. at best. I mean, yeah. Dead spots everywhere. I mean, yep. They just suck. And so
this is just one constant line that goes to a little board, and there's the light the next one, and then there's a ground that touches the back of the light. Exactly. That's it. Like,
it's simple, but it's like,
British. I can't believe the wiring even works. Let's be honest.
So, that is true. This thing runs.
Yeah.
Are you sure you need the tech?
I've been driving without it.
But it's like, you can even like, I do a perimeter LED I can put in these.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Because I was doing that for Singer for a while because they're...
Just Singer. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I won't...
Something inexpensive.
I won't name names, but the company that was building instruments for them couldn't figure out how to make them light correctly.
Oh. Yeah.
And so this other company located in a different state below Washington... actually, I think it's below Oregon. Oh. They get them not quite that far.
No,
it's right next to the ocean.
Yeah.
Arizona.
Oceanfront property there. Right.
Yeah. They'd send me a full set of Singer gauges, and then I would directly from the restoration repair shop, and then I would have to take them all apart again and retrofit them all with new lights and then put them all back together and then send them back to Singer.
Yeah.
But when I was figuring...
That seems
when I was,
cost effective, too.
Yeah. Well, Singer. You're not worried about price when you buy one of those.
No, it's true. Yeah, so, true.
But, I mean, when I was working with those guys and we were figuring lighting systems out and stuff like that, I mean, I learned all kinds of stuff. But, I mean, we can upgrade lighting. We can do,
I'm not as worried about the lighting. Like I said, I really just... I want it to be functional.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, since the lens is coming off, having that cleaned up so that it's visible a little bit better is probably the best. Yeah.
The bitch of it is going to be, when you get it back from me, it's going to look like $1 million.
I'm aware that we're just going to work our way across the desk.
Yeah, it's like a small...
Speedometer will come next.
It's part of my business plan is to... make it look as good as humanly possible, so it looks to make the rest of them look like trash.
And that's another thing, and maybe you can explain this to me too. My speedometer on that car has been working, but it is off by about 7 miles an hour. It has been since I've been a kid.
Right.
Is that something that could be inside the gauge, or is that something that's within the wheel sensors and things like that?
Well,
I need the exact answer now.
That car doesn't have wheel sensors.
No. Okay.
First of all, no. I mean, it depends. I can adjust the mile per hour based on how many cable turns per mile and if it needs to go up or down or what have you. The one thing that I do run into, especially on like a fully mechanical speedometer, is then seeing that the odometer is then counting correctly per mile.
Okay.
Because the odometer is directly geared to the cable. And there are some things built in the Speedo that allow for adjustments as far as calibration as of the miles per hour, but there is nothing put in there to adjust the amount of turns of your odometer per mile.
That's something I'll need to test see if the mileage is on, like drive 2 miles and see if it's actually...
Did it show 2 miles?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it one or the other? Because they're basically two independent systems.
Yeah.
Huh. They're running off the same one cable, but they work independently of each other.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm learning something.
There you go.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about something else here.
Yeah.
The artistic side of the gauges. Because restoration and, you know, additions is one thing, but like I'm looking at this gauge, it's Faster I Dare You on a speedometer. Very cool. Yeah. What got you, what, tell me about your artistic side and where that came from.
Well.
Artistic or autistic?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean. Fuck, I mean, how do you answer that? Like, I'm a great artist. I think I'm the best there ever was.
Yeah, that sounds like an artist.
No, I mean, like, were you always drawing as a kid? I mean, is it something that's just...
drawing and painting and, you know, my folks ran, they, like, managed an art gallery when I was a kid.
Okay, so, yeah.
And my dad, like, designed furniture and my mom was an interior designer for a while.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's things in the family, but I don't know. I try to make things look good. You know, like I can look at some and you know, I think other people have different opinions, but it's like I can just look at something and like, man, that looks like shit, like that's horrible. Or you look at something like, oh, that's very pleasing.
Yeah,
you know, and when you get to the pleasing stage, you're like, oh yeah, that's, I want to look at that, it looks good, that's nice, it's
Is this a common request of yours to do custom gauges like this?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I feel like something like that in an outlaw Porsche would be amazing.
I do a lot of custom Porsche gauges. I used to, when I started, you know, that's a Honda 750
gauge. It's a motorcycle gauge.
And I was doing a handful of those, but I don't know. They're just, thank God you have like a lot of car guys that like listen to this, because I'll tell you what, those motorcycle guys, they're like the cheapest bastards on the planet.
Yeah.
And you just I could never make any money.
Yeah. So
like, nobody ever wanted to pay for
it. A lot of us got into motorcycles because we wanted cheap speed. Yeah. It's like, okay, I can go buy a Ferrari for $200,000, or I can get the same speed out of a Honda CBR, a used one.
For $1,200.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like,
if you could put a mechanical speedometer on a modern Honda Monkey?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can.
You get like the front wheel drive.
Yeah.
Off of what would fit on there?
I don't know.
Anything with a mechanic pickup that you stick to the brake rotor.
Like, I think that would be really cool on one of the Honda
I know you can because Harley guys do it all the time.
Okay.
Even because you go for that. Anytime you get into custom bikes, Harley guys love analog gauges.
Yeah.
That's true.
And so there was a time when everything went electronic and it was those blue LEDs that were the worst. Yeah. But then the mechanical gauges came back. And in fact, a lot of those old school Harley gauges are worth a mint. And guys want them on their
huge money.
Yeah, they want them on their new projects. And so they do a mechanical pickup.
I never want to steal somebody else's idea, but the idea of having a gauge that says faster I dare you on a monkey when I can barely do 30.
I'll just change the 100 to like 40.
40. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
It'd be like reaching for the stars there.
Yeah, the early what are the guys down in Southern Washington that do the Enduro Engineering? Mm-hmm. Not Enduro Engineering. Who are they? They do the custom gauges for motorcycles. They've gotten big. The Husqvarna uses their gauge from the factory now, or so does KTM. They have a Explorer with built-in GPS. I can't remember. But those guys, when they first started, they were using an electronic gauge with a manual pickup, and he literally used. A special epoxy to get the magnet, glue it onto the rotor. Mm-hmm. And then you just ran the cable down there, and that was a speedo pickup. Okay. And it was at the time when everybody was trying to get dual sports on the street. It's super easy now to convert a dirt bike to a dual sport. Right. Back in the day, it was actually really hard. And one of the requirements was a speedometer, and this was a really cheap way to do it. Huh. So
I just think that would be.
That'd be awesome.
When I think about my bike and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, that could be, that's a lot of work.
That would look super cool, though.
I'm aware.
That
would be pretty awesome. Like, you know.
That gauge is actually probably worth more than your bike,
though. I can tell.
Just hold on. I've doubled the price of my monkey. My full monkey has Olin suspension.
So is mine now, too.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
titanium exost, Olin suspension.
I digress. I didn't know I was in the presence of.
But my motorcycle side is cheap, so.
And that's why I had to basically stop doing motorcycle stuff.
Yeah, that's smart.
And start working on cars.
Yeah.
I can see something like Brandon Pal though, with the his bobber.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So our buddy of ours did a steampunk theme. Is it Bonneville, right?
A Triumph Bonneville.
It started as that, then a bobber, and then he did a full custom paint. And this is the kind of thing that I would say would speak to someone like that who really wants to make something special.
Oh, yeah.
Stand it apart, like a steampunk style gauge. That's where.
We've become a little stupid in the fact that, like, I love my op-mid gauge that's on the bike, and I've upgraded from the Stock Monkey one, but I like it because it tells me my gas, and that's a big thing. So I'd have to come up with a gas gauge too. So,
yeah. Well, I think the differentiator here that people need to remember is that they're paying for a piece of art.
Agreed.
And people will pay a lot for art because it's worth it. Because you want something that's custom, and it is art. When you're looking at this, there's the side of the business that is obviously fix it, restoration, make it work again. And then there's this stuff, which I mean... It's like we had, what's his name, with the custom key fobs and things like that. Custom keys. Like, it's expensive because it's worth it.
It's worth it, yeah.
Because you want something different. It's going to stand out.
And it's like, you know, if you're that guy, for instance, you know, I mean, how long did he spend trying to figure it all out?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm in this 24 years now.
Exactly.
And it's like, you can't just teach that to somebody in a month or two. So it's like, you're paying for 20 years of, like, figuring out how to take your idea and then make it into something physical.
Yeah. But the wonderful thing is you take that and you put that on somebody's car, and they're out there marketing for you because somebody gets in the car and goes, oh my God, I want that. Yeah. So,
So that would look badass. Yeah. In a Porsche too. Like,
that,
so.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So, yeah. I mean, obviously, you moved the location over there. How does somebody, if they want to do this, do they need to bring you the vehicle? Do they pull the speedometer out and ship it to you?
Yeah.
Do they need to call you first to set up an appointment? How does that work? Besides just pulling you onto a podcast and going, hey, here's my speedometer. Here's my gate.
Yeah. Well, first of all, stay the hell away from my house.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay.
And, yeah. No.
Yeah. You only have to say it 6 times.
Restraining order.
Yeah.
I mean, the best way to get a hold of me, honestly, is through email.
Okay.
I'm so goddamn busy that I almost won't even pick the phone up anymore. And it's not because I don't want to. It's that I don't have the time.
Sure. Yeah.
I can't talk.
I understand that.
And that was kind of a valuable lesson, but I just would end up spending so much time on the phone. At the end of the day, I just couldn't get enough done because I'm basically a one man shop.
You have children though, and that's small hands. You can get their hands under the dash.
I've got another one. Do you want that's for sale?
It's a truck.
Yeah. So it's best to send me an email. People mail me stuff from all over the world. And, you know, as long as your contact info is in there.
Sure.
I'd look it over, write up a quote, send you the quote. If you approve it, then I'll do it. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. Is just email me through the website and we can kind of, just kind of. So we're looking at photos here.
We're browsing the Seattle Speedometer Instagram. Hold
on. Yeah, look at my Instagram. That's probably
one,
the best.
That one we're right using. Here. We're using that one. 100%.
Yeah.
See? He had some money.
Yeah.
There you go. He ran out right there, and it's like,
when your client asks if you can do it cheaper.
Yeah. I can.
Yeah,
I absolutely. Can do it as cheap as you want.
Yeah.
Do you want that?
No.
But yeah.
Amazing.
That's kind of the how it works at Seattle Speedo. Just,
but so, you know, shoot me an email.
Yeah, shoot me an email.
Bill Murray.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is him eating Thai food in Yakima.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Bill Murray
thing. He's like, what? So these people that have this Thai restaurant, it's called Bangkok OMG, which, I mean, you could take that many mm-hmm. different ways. I guess he like flies these people, the chef, like out to wherever he's at sometimes to cook for him. And it's, I've eaten here. It's just this tiny restaurant, like in a strip mall.
Have you heard about like if you want him in a movie, he has no agent.
Answering machine.
You call the answering machine, you pitch him the story, and he calls you back if he wants to be
maybe
in the movie.
Maybe he calls you back.
Maybe he calls you back. Yeah.
Is there anything so cool. better?
No, I just want to call and be like, hey, I'm a big fan.
I just want the phone number.
Yeah, I know.
I just want to listen to the machine.
Did you hear about that one guy who found it and then invited him to a party and he showed up?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Oh, yeah. He goes to people's weddings all the time.
I know.
I just love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, I just, you know, this stuff amazes me just because, like you said, they, you know, I think you put it so well in the fact that, like, these car companies didn't expect these cars to be on the road that long. They were like, you know, we're going to put a little bit of grease in this. It'll probably last 5 years.
We're out of grease? Oh, here's some Vaseline.
Just put something
in there. You just take it off and squeeze it in the back. Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it keeps me busy. That's for damn sure.
That's good. But that's absolutely good.
Yeah. And then
there's a tough one.
Oh wow, Mira? No,
Countach.
Just a Countach. Okay.
Yeah, and I think.
Went a little fast.
Well, I don't think. I think that was from the Sun.
Oh wow. Okay.
I think the Sun.
We're looking at a Countach, original Countach speedometer, and the gauge is bent.
Yeah, I can't quite remember.
I choose to believe that he went so fast that it broke. That's the way I sell that story.
Well, I mean, that sounds good.
Right? Absolutely.
God, I haven't looked at any of this. Is kind of mesmerizing. Keep going.
Go through your own Instagram.
Who is that? Yeah. This guy's awesome. Yeah. Look at these things.
I love your Instagram.
This guy's a fucking genius.
This guy's been doing this for like, what, about 24 years, I think?
Yeah. I see. It looks like
it. Yeah, I know.
Golly. Yeah. I probably can't afford him.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are... These are all good.
Yeah. Check out Instagram.com/Seattle Speedometer and then SeattleSpeedometer.com. You can get the contact info there. You can check out some beautiful gauges, some art.
Scroll to your heart's content.
Exactly. Yeah. It's better on a big screen.
It really is. I honestly don't think I've ever seen it this big. It's just on my phone. So.
Yeah. I hear that a lot.
That's how invested I am.
That's how you say it.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Look at that handsome fucker. Look at that guy. That's my wife right here, Janae.
Beautiful woman. Bad
shout out to Janae.
Yeah. Loving my life. That's what we look like now.
Oh, wow.
I know. She's doing good.
Yeah.
Not so good on me, but that's okay.
Oh, you both look great. Yeah.
Beautiful woman that's blind.
I know. Look at that. God, I was wondering
who the short-haired guy was on the website.
I've got Rebel Yell stuck in my head now.
Yeah. I should cut my hair like that again.
Yeah, you should.
That looks good.
Yeah. I'm just hearing ba da da ba da ba da ba.
Please don't.
All right.
Exactly. Well, we really appreciate you taking time and driving all the way over here.
Thanks for coming over. Yeah. Thanks for hanging out.
Is that it? Are we done?
Yeah.
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 Unless you got more stories.
Done.
Tell.
Yeah.
We got time?
That's all I got, I think.
Well, you can come back.
Yeah.
You want to come back?
Yeah, I'll come back.
Come back.
Yes.
Come back. Listeners, check out the latest issue of the Avance magazine. If you want to hear more about this, go to avance.com. Check out our events coming up. Speaking of which, we do have quite a few events.
I know. You guys are ridiculous.
Yeah.
How does it?
We got an off-road day coming up.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm just barely hanging on running one business. You guys have like multiple outlets here.
I know that we have that in Long Beach, the Grand Prix on the April 20th.
Yeah, with Motul.
They're coming to the Sunset Social at Trademark Brewery. And apparently, if you go and say Carl's name, they'll kick you out or something like that.
Probably.
Yeah. No. I'm trying to see what else. Like I said, I missed this.
He probably drinks all the beer.
I missed this conversation today, so I'm reading it as we're doing this. So, yeah.
So this is a high-end operation.
Hold off on that. We do have the Avance offer. Hold on a second. I was not prepared for this.
Jesus Christ.
My phone's in use.
This is why we don't have nice
things. Didn't you know I was coming?
I did. I'm the one that got you here. I don't have any internet. Hold on.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. Pull it up on there, would you?
Yeah.
We do have a computer here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've got the, let's see here. That's already gone. Porsche Underground. That's going to be coming up. Porsche Underground.
Yep. Next Thursday.
Where's that? Where is this?
Probably California.
California. Yeah.
Yep. SoTo.
Oh, look at that.
Exact location to be
shared
privately.
California is the state that's a little bit south of us.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. More details to come. Ooh.
Yeah.
There's always stuff like right in the works. It's you got to stay on top of the events.
Well, there's a big thing that's coming up in June. They just haven't announced it yet.
Yes.
But that's big.
We'll talk about that next week.
Yes. Well, that'll be on the next day. You know what? I did want to say something. You remember we had Wagon Fest. We talked about Wagon Fest. And I was bitching about how these car companies from Europe do not bring these big wagons. BMW's bringing the M5 wagon.
Nice.
State
here, so really?
That'll be neat. Yeah. It's all in camo right now, but it's that's going to be a big thing.
An M5 estate car.
Yeah.
Why don't they sell those here?
That's
the point.
They're finally doing it.
BMW saw what Audi did with the RS6 Avant, and they're going, we can. And what they need to do is they need to bring the M3 wagon over here. That thing. That new one is is it M3? Is it M4?
M3.
M3. So that'll be absolutely amazing. So,
well, if you want to see us, the Avance Off-Road event coming up April 27th. I'm going to put the new truck through the course and see how that goes.
No.
Yeah, we actually need to wake up early.
I'm bringing my yellow truck.
Hell yeah.
You should.
This is right over here.
I will dominate this.
It's right
here.
Down the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like five minutes away from here. Literally.
If people leave their windows open and their gauges get broken, you can fix them on the spot.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I'm telling people.
So always a good time. Hopefully it'll not be pouring down rain. Never know.
Actually, when it's raining, it's still a lot of fun.
I just like to stand out there in the rain.
But well, we have if only we had a tent or something.
Or two or three.
Or two or three.
We have three now.
Yeah. We have three tents now?
I have my small stand-up one, my 10x10. Then I have the 10x20s.
Yeah.
I have the off-road one for Avance,
and I got the RCS one still. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So we have lots of tents.
Wow. Yeah, lots of tents.
You guys are prepared.
Plethora of tents.
Yes. That's right.
Yes.
So anyway, we hope to see you there.
Yeah.
In tents. Come see us in tents. Hopefully we'll have hot dogs and fire.
Yeah, you definitely need to come back.
Okay.
This was no fun.
Yeah,
and, we didn't enjoy it. Yeah, this sucked. we really appreciate it though.
Yeah,
man.
Oh yeah, it's fun. I like it.
For this episode of the Avance Podcast, as always, I'm Nick.
I'm Dan. And don't just get there. Enjoy the drive.